Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Rehab Expert Success Show. Today, we're going to be talking about a recent NBA injury that occurred. And it was another Achilles injury that happened. This one was by the athlete named Dwight Powell. The video has kind of gone all over the interwebs just because of the zoomed in aspect on the Achilles, where you can see kind of the vibration that occurs from the Achilles injury, and it looks pretty crazy and pretty painful at the same time. Unfortunately, these Achilles injuries seem to be more and more of a common problem that happens. And we're hearing more and more of them in the NBA. I'm not sure what the research is or what the statistics are out there of 10, 15 years ago as far as the Achilles tendon injuries that occurred back then versus now, but it definitely seems like the rates are on the uprise and getting higher and higher, unfortunately. So that begs the question, why is that occurring? What can we be doing differently? Is there anything that we could be doing differently? Or is this just an injury that it's a matter of time and exposure that happens? And once someone hits that count, is their time numbered from the start and there's nothing you could have done? I think there are a lot of considerations we have to take into this, and I think there are things that we can do. Some are easier to change than others, but that's what today's episode is going to be all about. Is there anything we can be doing to help prevent an Achilles rupture and this potential increase of amount of Achilles injury that we're seeing in the NBA and in some other sports as well, too? So I'm going to put the picture and the video up of the injury just so you can get a viewpoint of what it looks like. So if you're watching this on the YouTube channel, you'll be able to see it. If you're watching this on the podcast, if you just go Google the Dwight Powell Achilles injury, you'll be able to see it and it'll pop up. If you're a member of the Sports Rehab Expert Facebook group, that free group, we posted the video of there and well in there as well, just to start a discussion with the members of that group. So again, if you're not involved with that Facebook group, make sure you add yourself. If you search Sports Rehab Expert Mentorship on the Facebook groups, you'll be able to see it. It's a free group and a lot of free content that we put out inside of that group to, again, help accelerate your learning and development. So want to talk about this injury from a standpoint of workload, because that's, I think, what everybody immediately goes to with this type of injury was, he just exceeded the capacity of his tendons, so that's why that injury occurred. But when we talk about workload, a lot of times all that we're considering is, you know, week to week, the acute standpoint of things, or within that season, which would be the chronic standpoint of things. But we don't necessarily look further out than that, too, which would be even more of the chronic contributions to this injury. So when we talk about sports specialization, now I did some research on the athlete that was injured. Hold on a second. His name was Dwight Powell. Again, I know nothing about him. I'm just purely speculating here at this point in time and making assumptions. So take everything here with a grain of salt. But I'm just trying to make a point. If anybody has any detailed information that would refute my point, then feel free to share it with me. But if you look at his high school career, he played for the IMG Academy. This IMG Academy is a, if you know anything about it, it's where a lot of high recruits go to. It's a school that is for sports specialization. So if we're considering that sports specialization played a role into this from a chronic workload standpoint, it appears that this is very well a potential reason. Again, I don't know if he played multiple sports growing up. I don't know when he specialized in basketball and when he stopped playing other sports, what other sports he may have been playing, or if he just focused strictly on basketball or how much basketball he was playing. But what we do know is a lot of athletes in today's day and age are going to be playing a lot of AAU ball, a lot of basketball. That increases the number of exposure to potential risks. Now we'll talk about potential positions the athletes get in and how they can avoid those positions that put them at risk for injury. But inevitably, these things are going to occur during a game. And the more games you play, the more number of exposures you're going to be involved with. Now, versus the kid who's specializing, who goes from playing basketball to baseball, let's say, that's a very different demand that is placed on the Achilles. So there's not as much stress that's being played there. So again, if we go back through and looking at the records or the statistics of injuries 10, 15 years ago, would it have happened as often as today's day and age where we're highly, highly specialized? And again, just due to the number of exposures, I would say that's a big reason why we see these Achilles tendon ruptures being more common. It's also a big reason why we see ACL injuries more commonly. Not to mention the fact that the athletes are not getting exposed to a variety of movements by playing a variety of sports, and all the sports that they do play are very, very structured. There's no free play or movement exploration that takes place. That's also very problematic, as we'll talk about in the biomechanics section of this talk, of why someone may not choose the most efficient movement pattern to accomplish a task. And that can potentially lead to increased number of exposures to injury. So the sheer number of games that you play increases your number of exposures to injury. And again, the only way to make that unavoidable is to play multiple sports and to not play basketball year round. Unfortunately, with the amount of money that's being pulled in with AAU balls, these sport camps, these year-round teams, and the, you know, schools being developed strictly for this purpose, this is a hard ball to stop rolling. It's not going to change anytime soon. It's going to take a lot of us keep talking the talk and more general public awareness of this factor. So people start to consider if they do have some potential to take it to the next level, say college, or potentially take it to the next level of pro, that they realize that what their decisions they make during high school are going to greatly influence what happens later on in their career. And if they take a little bit more of a longevity approach, sometimes that has a better outcome versus, you know, if you're just trying to get rewarded in the here and now. Certainly the middle school championships mean very, very little in the grand scheme of things, especially elementary championships. So, you know, we need to consider that now. As you get closer into high school, yeah, things become more meaningful. But when did you specialize? Was it a freshman, or was it more when you were a sophomore, junior, senior? You know, the further you delay that, then the less risk you have for number of exposures. Again, it's just one consideration to have for mechanisms of injury. There's a lot of people who've gone through all those and not had problems. So there's other considerations that we have to make as well. But number of exposures to potential mechanisms of injury are very, very high on the list for reasons to be hurt. So, with the medical staffs these days being so aware of monitoring workload with GPS systems, and heck, people will even rest, and you'll see on the box score where athletes did not play due to workload management. You'll see that right on the stat sheet. Now it's common knowledge in the game. So it's not necessarily the problem within that season or that or the week to week, because the staffs are very aware of that now, that this is not something that is new to them. The problem is what happens 10 years before that, and how that has an accumulated effect over the long run of that athlete's career, the longer and longer they stay in the game. Now, if we want to take away that side of the thing, and it's like, okay, you know, I realize, you know, it sucks of the current environment of specialization and what is going on and how that's going to be such a hard thing to change. And it's going to take a long time for it to change, and a long time for that awareness to be brought to the general public. What can I do now that I have an athlete who is going to be involved in some of those scenarios, and understanding that that is going to be something that we're going to have to be very aware of and adjust our treatment plans and our training programs accordingly. So number one, what I want to draw your attention to, and we'll put a video back up on the screen of this injury, is just how the injury occurred. So the movement happened when the athlete went to make foot repositioning step to apply force in the ground so they could go in the opposite direction to try to get past the defender. So they're trying to create a stretch shortening cycle to produce more force in the ground so that they have a little bit more momentum to try to, again, get by the defender. That is the task involved. But when we look at the athlete and how they accomplished that task, they did so with a very, very extended positioning of the limb. So if we look at the position of the limb, hip extension, knee extension, and ankle plantar flexion, that in the strength and conditioning world is called triple extension. Triple extension is a force producing or a concentric activity. It is not a force absorption or an amortization phase posture that the athlete should be in during that moment. Triple flexion would be. So hip flexion, knee flexion, ankle dorsiflexion. That is a force absorption. That is an amortization phase positioning of the joints to better apply or accept that force to then propel themselves into a triple extended posture to produce force. So this athlete is putting force into the ground in a triple extended position when really they should be triple flexing. So just think of this from a depth jump perspective. If you were to jump off a box and land in the box and then try to jump up again, you would not land on the ground in a triple extended position. You would not land with your hips extended, your knees extended, and your ankles plantar flexed, because that would not be very effective to absorb that force and then reproduce the force into another vertical jump. You would land from a depth jump in a hip flex, knee flex, ankle dorsiflex position to absorb that force and then reproduce that force. So what the athlete needs to learn how to do is apply that jab step or apply that force impulse with a little bit more of a hip flex position, knee flexed, and the ankle dorsiflex, so that the knee is not so far into extension, because the moment that knee gets in all the way into that extension, the more heel drop that is going to occur, because all that we have to absorb force now is strictly at the Achilles. So there's going to be a longer ground contact time, and that heel is going to drop further, and it's going to have to absorb a lot more force rather than distributing it through the entire kinetic chain if they were in a little bit more of that triple flex posture. So we'll throw some other videos up of people making a jab stack but are a little bit more in a hip flex, knee flex, ankle dorsiflex position. And why that makes a difference, again, is how efficiently you distribute force through the entire limb, which in and of its own right is an acute workload management choice that the athlete has to make. And the better movement this individual has, the more likely they're going to choose this movement during a sport situation. So again, if the athlete hasn't had the time growing up playing tag or have free played, every bit that they do is always structured, they're not going to have a big movement repertoire. And unfortunately, that leads to these situations where they're not necessarily choosing the most movement efficient strategy to accomplish the task. So that is something that you're going to have to teach as a rehab professional, as a trainer, as someone who's working with an athlete in the gym on agility, and then talk to the sporting coaches as well too, of how they can apply this movement. This is how the movement should look without a ball, but then a ball in their hand when they have a defender on them, this is what they need to be practicing and how it should look like. So the sporting coaches can re-emphasize that as well too. So that all matters. The communication lines matter a great deal, and sporting coaches can learn a great deal from strength and conditioning coaches and rehab professionals for the individuals who understand what is truly going on in sporting movements. Now, the question that always happens from there is like, well, you know, this is sport. And, you know, the athlete's going to put themselves into a bad position. It's inevitable. It's going to happen during the game. And I 100% agree with that. The athlete playing a sport will put themselves in a position that isn't always advantageous. So they need to have the tissue resiliency to be able to get themselves out of that position. But then also, the more exposure that they have to games, the more potential number of volume that these potential mechanism of injury and these encounters will start to occur. So it isn't just a tissue resiliency thing at that point in time. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier as far as the number of exposures that the athlete had growing up. And if you're a young athlete in high school, you're thinking your body is capable of doing a whole heck of a lot more than you could when you were, say, 10 years in the NBA. When you're that late into your career, you change the way how you play the game. And oftentimes that limits your number of exposures right there too. So if the athletes are starting their exposures to this potential mechanism of injury so much sooner, they're increasing their number of exposures and the amount of force that they can apply just sheerly by being younger in that situation too. So not only are they increasing their number of exposures, but because they're younger when these exposures happen, they can apply more force, which again is another reason why a potential risk can happen, is being in disadvantageous position and applying a lot of force. So Another reason why we need to teach athletes how to move. And that sounds silly to some people who are all on the tissue resiliency train, and that's all they can focus on. So they might just be doing calf raises to try to build tissue resiliency up. Now, it's certainly important to have tissue resiliency, but it's not the only thing. As you can see from this entire talk, there's a lot of factors that go into this, and we need to be considering all these entire factors, or we're not really having a very whole, well-rounded approach to this situation, and like we're going to have less than desired outcomes. So these are the factors that you should consider. And again, some things are a little bit more changeable or in control than others. And certain situations, again, like the specialization situation, it's going to take a long change to occur. And it's going to take a lot of education for that to occur, too, because there's a lot of moolah being made in companies, and they're not going to stop making money at this point in time. It's people are going to have to stop realizing that they need to that this is the only way to get to the next level. There's plenty of ways to get to the next level, and sports specialization isn't the only way. So that's one thing you can do. And then also, again, that we talked about, making sure you're moving correctly. Starting from a young age, you know, this person could be out playing tag and free playing a little bit more, and they probably need less coaching later on in their career about how to avoid these positions, and their body just intuitively knows that if they're about ready to absorb force, they better be in a triple flex position. If they're trying to produce force, then they would move from a triple flex position to a triple extended position. As athletes who have been playing, free playing their whole life, they just kind of intuitively know that. But the athletes who are specialized and everything structured, oftentimes you have to keep that structure going and to create learning experiences for them. So that's just what we're in this day and age, and what we're going to have to deal with and cope with and work around at this particular point in time. So that may change in another 10 years, but right now that's where we're at in this current state environment. So those are the things to consider. I hope you found this episode helpful. Like always, if you have any questions, feel free to put them in the comments below. If you have some constructive criticism or other thoughts that you want to contribute to this conversation, I welcome those as well too, but they have to be constructive. You put those in the comments below. You can send me an email for a follow-up question. If you head to sportsrehabexpert.com, we have a submission button where you can submit a follow-up question to this talk or to talks in the future. Just as an FYI, if you missed an episode a little bit ago where I had John Garish on, we talked about sprinting postures in delaying knee extension and the role of the Achilles. That one ties very well into what just we talked about here. It's just in relationship to linear speed or top-end sprinting. So you might want to check that one out as well, too. We have a wide variety of things in the Sports Rehab Expert members area where we talk about Achilles injuries. We talk about rehab. We talk about performance, as well as other things. New in that Sports Rehab Expert members area is a CEU course for physical therapists and athletic trainers currently right now. And we also have rehabilitation game plans. These are not protocols. These are game plans with specific criteria and specific goals that the athletes must make to progress through and hit the next level of a phase of that rehabilitation or performance to build tissue resiliency in an optimal fashion. So these aren't your standard protocols with standard exercises. This is very, very nitpicky and specific, and teaches you how to apply it across the spectrum for your general population and your sport specific clients. So just perfect timing. We actually a week ago released the Achilles version of this. So that is in the members area currently. And you can find that too, to see exactly what we would do with someone who has Achilles tendinopathy. It's not going over a rupture scenario, although eventually you will get to some of these exercises in a rupture scenario, as well as you would definitely want to use these exercises as far as an injury preventative mechanism as well too. And then we have our Sports Rehab Expert Certification, which is our flagship program on treatments and assessments. There are two courses. Again, treatments and assessments, it's broken up into those. And that's where we go over our entire program, A to Z, and exactly what we do in pretty much every scenario you could think about. So that's how we help you become a better clinician or strength coach. Again, more than happy to help you out. If you submit a question in the sportsrehabexpert.com submission, question submission area, fill that out, and we can keep communication lines open and moving forward. And that's all I have today. So hope you all have a nice day. We'll see you next time and talk soon.
Hey, thanks for watching. If you found yourself wondering how we can help you more, visit us at sportsrehabexpert.com, where we have more free content, products, and courses that you can take to accelerate your learning. Or you can just send me an email at greg@sportsrehabexpert.com. And one more thing, if you found this video helpful, please subscribe so you get notified whenever a new video comes out. And please like and share any content that you feel was helpful. Thanks.